We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hammer. The rookie running back class in all formats. That's what we're talking about on today's episode of Stealing Banana Shorts. I'm Ben Gretsch. You can find my newsletter at bengretsch.substack.com. With me, as always, is Sean Siegel. You can find all of his great work over at RotoViz. Let's jump into the discussion. There's multiple things to emphasize here that I just want to drive home. We definitely pay heavy attention to draft capital, first of all, and that's a really important element. Franklin's profile is still pretty interesting, three-year guy, 21 years old, but it does matter that he went in the early fourth round, that he lasted until the fourth round. Now, to be fair, a team traded up and took him on the second pick of day three. It was nice to see that his slide immediately stopped as soon as it went on to day three, but having, which is an indication because there was a gap in an overnight period between round three and round four. It's an indication that over the sleep on it period, at least the team that took him was like, this is the best prospect that's still available. We have to trade up and get him in the first pick of day four or day three, round four, which is a positive. But we're talking about him alongside guys that literally went round one, right? At the very end of round one, Xavier Leggett, Ricky Pierce, all those guys. And so there is obvious context there. And you do have to consider, and that's part of why you can't really go take Franklin ahead of those guys and justify that. You're saying there's a lot of I know better, the IKB moniker that we use sometimes in the fantasy industry. There's a lot there if you're taking Troy Franklin at like 112 or something, which I did in a pre-draft rookie draft. I took him at 112 because I thought he was worth that. He's no longer worth that. It's just that's what happens when you go in the fourth round. So that's one important thing I want to emphasize. The other thing I want to emphasize is this point that I think you laid out very, very well about Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, the 201, 202 range. If you're there on the clock and somebody wants to trade up or trade in and you're willing to take their future first and maybe why you would do that and how you would do that, it makes sense. But there's a pretty massive gap. So this gets back to that point about tiers and what this class is, because we've talked in the past, Sean, about how there's basically, and it depends, maybe five, maybe six elite prospects that you can make a case for. You know, you did this series in the pre-draft period that they should be the rookie draft 101. And you can make a case that they're generational types, right? I mean, it's Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Brock Bowers as the non-quarterbacks. And then it's Caleb Williams and Jane Daniels as the quarterbacks. Daniels, in part, he's got some issues. And I know a lot of people love to emphasize them. Other people are just like blowing past them. I don't, you know, it depends where you land on him, but the rushing ability, the fact that he's, you know, talking in interviews about how he wants to be the greatest running quarterback of all time. We know that that scores well in fantasy. So there's a huge thing there as well.
But one of the things that just, Ben, I'm having a hard time understanding in any format is that, I mean, Jaden Daniels is a better rushing quarterback than Anthony Richardson, and he's a much better passer. How is Richardson ahead of him everywhere based on like a handful of snaps last year? I mean, he was fantastic, right? He looked like a fantasy football god, but there's no way that that part was sustainable. And the other thing is that this big kind of contrast between the two, I think for a lot of people, is that Richardson is a massive human being and Jaden Daniels is not. But Richardson has already been hurt multiple times at the NFL level. I mean, he's already demonstrated that he has a hard time, not actually has a hard time staying healthy, but that there's certainly nothing about the superhuman element of his physique that protects him from injury, right? So that part to me doesn't make any sense, because what you are interested in a fantasy player is what is their scoring profile, and the scoring profiles for these two guys are different, and the scoring profile for Daniels is better.
That's right. And this is the point I'm trying to emphasize with this top five, really. I just pulled up your dynasty rankings. I've talked about them before. I love the way that you do them, is particularly if you go on RotoViz to the dynasty rankings, you go to tiers by position. It will default to the composite rankers, which pulls in Blair Andrews and Curtis Patrick, two great rankers as well. Or you can just pick Sean's independent rankings, or you can look at each of them independently, or however you want to do it. I'm on your current or most recent post-draft rankings update, and you have them tiered. And I love the way that you guys do this. I've said this before, because you guys tier them, and there's a sort of a key of what you should pay for the different tiers. And so tier one is 3 round 1 picks. You have 8 players total in that group. They would be the superstars. They're the ones in Superflex. It's the top 5 QBs and the top 3 wide receivers. And you're talking about, you'd have to pay multiple first, 3 first round picks to try to trade for them. Tier two is 2 first round picks. And the top 5 rookies this year are all in that tier two, just as a little bit of a teaser. So, like, and this is sort of what we've been trying to emphasize, is even the 105 is not just worth a first round pick, hypothetically. Like, it's such a strong top that you should have to pay multiple first round picks to get into the 105 this year in a Superflex tight end premium format. This is the RotoViz TriFlex format. And yet at 201, you should be trading out for a future first, because it's not that valuable of a 201. And so the difference between, and there's a transition there where the different players land, Drake May and JJ McCarthy and Roma Dunze and Xavier Worthy and the rest of those guys down to the Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman group. But the difference between at 105, if you were to chart it, there being more value this year than a typical class. And then maybe at 201 or 202, and I think definitely it may be like at about 205, they're probably being a little bit less value than typical. But then also at like 305, they're being more again, because you have that big tier that I mentioned. Once you get out like beyond 205 into like the 207, 208, 209 range, that the start of that tier in the late second stretches well into the third, and you have the Vidals and the Tyrone Tracys and some really interesting round 3 running back flyers, as well as the tight ends will sometimes fall there, the secondary tight ends behind Bowers. And then there's still some really interesting receivers that you can make some plays on in the third round, even into the fourth round of some of these rookie drafts. I think not all my drafts are to that stage yet, but I anticipate as we get there that there's going to be some interesting names still going that late. And so it's a lesson in understanding where the value in a class is and being able to move around and try to be making your picks in the pockets of value where, like, yeah, this 305 that I'm picking this year is better than a typical 305, but maybe the 209 isn't, or whatever. The 201, certainly, as we were just talking about, maybe is worth trading out of. But it's also unique in the respect of the top five being so strong in this class. And those profiles, again, it's not just dynasty. That ports over to redraft, to best ball, all of that really, really well. It's an important point. I've been trying to drive this home in best ball, and we'll continue to set aside Roma Dunze. Sean, we're probably going to wind up talking about him. He's the one that I got the most questions about. Why did Sean have Roma Dunze so low? You and I exchanged plenty of emails about that already. So we'll try to clue the listeners in, but I think both of us would prefer to not have to talk about Roma Dunze a ton as well, after we've already emailed about him a bunch. But setting him aside, the Harrison and the neighbors, the really high ADPs on those guys, even Bowers, who's starting to slide, we know the talent is there, and it's a traditional rookie bet on, okay, you know, late single digit rounds, what have you. We're betting on this guy just being an absolute superstar right away. But in part because of the move towards rookie values increasing in best ball and redraft, and really on underdog, I think is one that we should really emphasize in best ball. The multi-year increase, and also the fact that the top names, the Harrison and the neighbors, are so high this year, it does pull that next group in. And this is something I've been, like I said in the pre-draft period, I didn't understand why Brian Thomas was going like 65. And now that he got the draft capital that was expected and got a pretty good landing spot, or at least quarterback-wise, I mean, then we can talk through that as well. he's going higher. And I mentioned on Ship Chasing that I think he should have been going lower to Pat, and Pat kind of laughed and he's like, well, he was going 65 pre-draft. So, you know, if he gets the draft capital in the landing spot, how does he not go higher than that? And I'm like, well, now we're just anchoring to a pre-draft price that I thought was wrong. Like that, he should have been going multiple rounds lower. So there's a conversation there to be had. Certainly, if you are looking at the pre-draft price, he should be rising because he did get the confirmed draft capital. I think it was pick 23. He was the wide receiver 4. He does land with a good up and coming young quarterback. I think there's a lot of reasons to be really excited about what happened for Brian Thomas on draft night. But when I start to talk about this gap between that top 5 tier in rookie drafts and the 201, we start talking about the Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman profiles and the fact that they have opportunity in front of them and maybe aren't good enough prospects to immediately take huge advantage of it, and we have some worries. Then you think about the gap in best ball between the premium rookies and the other ones that are going pretty high. My point just being, it does port over, and it's something to consider. How much exposure do you want to Ladd McConkey in the single-digit rounds? How much exposure do you want to Keon Coleman in the single-digit rounds? Because we all remember when Justin Jefferson was a round 9 pick in redraft and was a monster as a rookie. But are you going to get Justin Jefferson with this profile? That's an important question as we talk about it from a dynasty lens that does immediately come over to best ball and redraft as well.
It does, and you've described that so well that I'm going to jump down to this element you talked about with round 3 and how it gets flat. And so for me, the weak part of this draft is exactly as you described it, which is sort of from the 204 to the 210-ish type of range, where it's not that you're not getting good players. And certainly you're going to get players who are more valuable, at least in terms of how the community views them, than the round 3 guys. But what is the gap? Because if you've acquired a lot of round 2s, you want that gap to be pretty meaningful, right? Or else you can just continue to move down. And it is one of the reasons that I think you go ahead and want to move down in some of these cases. Pat and I were on the clock at 212. We had either Leggett or Franklin, two guys we really liked. We took a future round 2 and a future round 3, which in a vacuum, if you're saying, yeah, you're the 212 for a future 2 and 3, that's pretty clear cut. And yet we had guys that we liked there in part because those are the same basic values you would have gotten at the 205, 206. But as you go through it, that group in round 3 that you mentioned as being fairly strong, you know, I want to reiterate that. And one of the ways I think that you can tell is that those guys are coveted in rounds 14 through 18 of best ball. And when I say coveted, they're drafted there, right? But as individual managers are putting together their portfolios and trying to figure out how they're going to create at least some exposure to the guy who ends up being, you know, the next Kyren Williams or, you know, the next player from that sort of late round rookie-ish range who comes out and has success, and someone like a Vidal, as you were mentioning, where, I mean, you look at the round 6 and you're comparing some of the evaluations of him to guys who went, you know, 100 picks earlier. And yet, like, what's most likely to help you win this year in best ball? And then what would that mean to you in dynasty? Because if the person helps you win in best ball, their dynasty value is going to rise. One of the interesting things that I've seen, and it's, you know, on a Chargers site, so obviously they're painting a very pro Chargers picture, but basically that the evaluations for him from, you know, some sources are saying, like, this is Blake Corum with athleticism, right? And you think about all the different levels that, you know, resonates on or gives you a little bit insight into. One of the things that we mentioned last week on our draft shows was this idea of Kyren Williams being so hurt by Corum going in there. And yet, I mean, he was not. But one of the things that we saw is that other than the very late round pick of Cornelius Johnson, I mean, the Chargers were not prioritizing the Michigan Wolverines skill positions. Now, partly it's just because you only have a very limited number of picks, but, you know, they go out and take McConkey, not Roman Wilson. They get Vidal, and partly because Blake Corum went way too early. And I like Corum, but you weren't going to get exposure to him. But if they're basically saying, I mean, this is the profile and the type of production that we got at Michigan from this player, and we can get it in round 6 with a guy who is very, very similar, except a better actual athlete, which you can look to the testing to say, you know, that's probably true. You can look to the broken tackle numbers from last year and say, that's probably true. And then who's in a better situation, right? And so that resonates in both contexts, both in best ball and in dynasty.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And as we talked about the McConkey stuff and you emphasized the pass volume, I mean, that's what flashed through my head. It's just one more reason to be in on Vidal, because the landing spot, Sean, we talked pre-draft a lot about this, but this was always going to be one that we fell in love with, whoever landed there, I think, in some respects. But Vidal's a guy that you told Stealing Bananas listeners to be looking at late in best ball or in the pre-draft range. He has a good profile. He has an underrated late round profile. He is one of the running backs. When we did the running back show that you mentioned as a, you know, a guy to get a little bit of exposure to. And the reason we liked the Chargers landing spot so much is you do have to be really aware of what they brought in otherwise. I mean, I think the guy that I'm most concerned about is, or guys are the incumbents are like, you know, what if Isaiah Spiller is something? You know, what if he shows a little bit of juice? And that's not to say that Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins can't be anything. You mentioned in your top 50 thing and talking about Vidal that J.K. Dobbins is talking favorably about his rehab, but he's 1 year removed from an Achilles. And the first guy that comes back 1 year from an Achilles and has a great season, I mean, you know, I guess the next guy will be the first or what have you. It's usually at least a 2 year thing or sometimes career ending, unfortunately, but that's the reality of the Achilles injury. I'm hopeful because we have loved J.K. Dobbins, love talking about him. It would be fantastic to see him rebound, but you do have to be aware that there's probably going to be some limitations there with the Achilles and the number of injuries that he's had over the years. And then in Gus Edwards' perspective, I mean, I don't know if there's a player I'd more likely be interested in fading this year. We've talked about Edwards a lot over the years. I was out on him last year. He set a career high in rushing yards and additionally had 13 rushing TDs, which tied his career total to that point. At the same time, like, he wasn't efficient. He's been a 5+ yards per carry guy in every prior season that he got a touch, and he was 4.1 last year. And now he loses Lamar Jackson, and his particular style of straight line between the guards, not even just between the tackle, but right up the gut, vertical running, hard nose downhill running is perfect for a mobile quarterback, where the ability of Lamar Jackson to pull the ball out of these read options and go around the edge holds the ends, and it prevents defenses from crashing down into the, you know, the defensive lines can't crash down into the inner parts of the rushing, you know, defense. And it opens up those lanes in the inside, or at least that's the understanding for why mobile QBs like a Lamar Jackson, statistically speaking, positively influence the yards per carry of their running backs. And Edwards, I always thought, was a really good fit for that. But on top of that, never caught, I mean, he caught 12 passes last year. That was a career high as well. Had 198 carries, also a career high. And so good for him at age 28 to come back from some serious injuries and to be able to take on a pretty big workload, his first 200 touch season of his career. But I do, again, I want to emphasize the rushing efficiency was already gone. He loses the Lamar Jackson benefit. He's never been a pass catcher, 30 career receptions, and is now going, yes, he's back into the Greg Roman scheme and is now going to an offense that is going to use him quite a bit. But he'll be age 29 this year, or he already is, actually turned it on April 13th. You know, a fun player, a fun runner, not my type of fantasy back because of the lack of receiving and all of that. You know, you have the potential for touchdowns, and I understand, like, an underdog in some of those formats, talking about half PPR. But I don't think you're going to get explosive efficiency, and I think you're really not going to see the return to 5-plus yards per carry at this age without Lamar Jackson, even if it is a Greg Roman offense. And so there's room, whether it's Vidal, whether it's Isaiah Spiller or somebody, there's room for somebody else to just look a lot more explosive than Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins in practice, who are both probably not going to look particularly explosive in practice. They might be reliable. They might make the right decisions. And I think that's going to matter to Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. And I think they're going to give a lot of inefficient touches to Dobbins and Edwards, and maybe more so to Edwards, where I feel more confident in that because of the lack of coming back from an Achilles element that Dobbins is dealing with. I do think there's going to be volume there for those guys. But especially as you start to think late season and all of that, there has to be room for somebody else to look more explosive and to take on that work. And so that's why that felt like such a great landing spot. It's because of the, you know, the other names that were there. And then also, as you talked about, like with the McConkey stuff, if they're going to run that much, someone's going to benefit. I mean, this feels, and Vidal does fall to the sixth round, but this feels like some of those other examples of late round guys that got a lot of cap, a lot of work in their rookie seasons. And a lot of times when we do that, it's like, oh, you're just pattern matching, and that's fair. But with running back, if you start to go back the last few years and you just look at the day three backs, a lot of them have gotten a lot of work. And a lot of times it's the ones that we said were landing in the spots that had a lot of work to give. These teams do sort of treat it as a running backs don't matter type of thing. Like, when they give even a sixth round pick to a guy, there's something to be said about that. Tyler Algier, I remember, to Atlanta at that time, was a fifth round pick that was talked about that way. He ended up getting immediate work.
Damian Pierce as a rookie.
1,000 yards as a rookie. Damian Pierce to Houston in round four was talked about that way. James Robinson is the one that everyone goes back to, the UDFA a few years prior. Elijah Mitchell in round six, it was kind of clear that him or Trey Benson would get decent work as rookies. They were both rookies, not Trey Benson, Trey Sermon. They were both rookies in the same class. Trey Sermon was the round three Niners pick in that same year, but Elijah Mitchell beat him out as a round six back. There's a ton more that maybe didn't get him right away in year one, but did in year two. Kyren Williams was a round five guy. Jerome Ford here is a round five guy. He got a lot of work last year. They made him wait 1 year, but they saw a round five back as a guy that would be a big part of their future. And then when Nick Chubb went down this year, they told us all offseason last year that was their backup. And then when Nick Chubb went down, they made him their guy. Roshon Johnson, a round four guy last year, played quite a bit as a rookie. I mean, there are quite a few examples of day three guys. Now, Vidal was a round six guy. A lot of these other ones I'm mentioning are round four. It is different. But when we can pinpoint the opportunity in front of him on an offense like this, it reminds of more than just James Robinson, is sort of the point I'm trying to drive home. There are a number of pretty good examples of guys that have fallen to day three, but because of the landing spot, you're like, this guy's going to get touches in year one. And he does.
If you accumulate a lot of picks, then you more or less never have to actually pay for running back because you're going to be able to take your shots. So you think about as you move through that second round there, and as you get to the middle to the end, you have Jalen Wright and Marshawn Lloyd. Wright, excellent explosiveness, fantastic peripherals, perfect landing spot. Lloyd, fantastic peripherals, maybe an okay landing spot, but certainly the Packers are already talking about playing him alongside Josh Jacobs. But then you move down and you get into round three, and you have Will Shipley with special athleticism. You have Tyrone Tracy with special athleticism. You have Bucky Irving with special production. And then you have Vidal, who's a little bit of a mix of those characteristics. And that is even before we get to players like a Ray Davis, who could come in and give you production as part of a committee there in Buffalo. He probably doesn't have the special attributes either way, but is sort of a high value touch guy. So even though these guys are not being labeled as big time prospects, then as we're looking for third round picks, we want there to be something special about them. And so if you have the special production or you have the special athleticism, either one of those things, if the landing spot is the least little bit intriguing. So for Irving, you have the special production and you have a weak starter, right? So there are a lot of different stories that you can tell yourself about how these would work out. And again, if you're fighting to get these players in the final rounds of best ball, and Tracy's the perfect example because he has a soft starter ahead of him and is a special athlete, then you should also be fighting to build up the amount of picks so that you can select these guys in Dynasty, and you can also be wrong, right? Because we're saying all these flowery things. One of the things that was, you know, it was humorous in a way about watching the NFL draft, but it also kind of made you feel good, is that as they are discussing the picks and you get into round five and round six, like every single guy is super high character and they were surprised you didn't go three rounds earlier. It's like, you know that almost not, I mean, very, a huge number of those guys, I should say, are not even going to make their teams, right? But the enthusiasm for them and that palpable, you know, love for the process, and just we're all rooting for all of these guys to succeed. We want to understand that part of it. And then also know, yeah, I mean, some of these stories we're telling are going to come out to not be true stories. The more that you can take your shots on people with special traits, the more you can be wrong. If you just have one guy late in each draft, I mean, you're more likely than not to hit on the one who isn't going to do anything for you simply because most of them actually aren't going to.
Yeah, I mean, you said that so well. The Ray Davis, the Bucky Irving, Tyrone Tracy examples. I want to throw in a guy that I think I may be worried that I'm too low on in Audric Estime, who, I mean, just again, because of the Bo Nix landing spot, which we talked about pre-draft as just the perfect landing spot, but I just feel so confident in the running back receiving potential there. So basically any back that lands with the Broncos, even though there's a lot of names ahead of him, and I do think you're going to be talking about Samaje Perine still being viable, and obviously Jaleel McLaughlin's there and Javonte Williams is there, but just the fact that they add another running back is interesting. He doesn't have a huge receiving profile in college, but they might be envisioning him as more of like the power back in the Sean Payton system. Sean Payton would often have a back that didn't actually catch passes, which was, you know, you don't necessarily want that guy. But there's just, I mean, navigating how it was fascinating, Sean, during the draft, something we didn't get a chance to talk about because we just did the day two stream and not the day three stream. It was fascinating to see them all come off in round four, the running backs. Jalen Wright goes at 120. Bucky Irving goes at 125. And then Shipley, Ray Davis, and Isaac Garendo go 127, 128, 129. So you get 5 and 10 picks right there after you'd had four the whole draft up to the 120th pick. And then 134, Braylon Allen goes. Another 5 picks after that. And then 147 is when Estime went. And then 3 straight at 165, 166, and 167. Another at 173, one at 181, one at 186. I mean, they kept flying off the board at that point. There were 6 in round 4. There were 5 in round 5. There were 4 more in round 6. There were none in round 7. They all came in that 4-5-6 range, which, again, gets back to the point that for Vidal, I mean, he goes in round 6. He doesn't just go a little bit behind some of those round 4 guys. He goes like 6 names behind him. There's a bunch of NFL teams that decided they wanted a different running back than him, and that's also somewhat notable. But when we talk about, when I was talking about the opportunity that could be there for this round 6 guy, it is very important that, as you noted, there are a lot of positives about his profile. There's the athleticism. There's the workhorse ability that he showed at Troy. And it could just be one of those things where he gets pushed down a little bit because he's a back out of Troy. I mean, it's one of those realities. I also want to say, I'm sure a lot of the listeners, as I was naming off all those day three guys, were screaming Isaiah Pacheco into their you know, phones or wherever they're listening to us.
But I don't use him as an example of a late round success.
He's a round 7 guy
of the Chiefs ruining their roster.
He's a round 7 guy the Chiefs gave a ton of volume to in year 1, but there is some question at least we have always had some question over at Stealing Bananas about, you know, sort of what they were thinking as it relates to all of that. But it's more evidence that teams aren't writing off their round 7 picks at running back. If anything, there, that's like good draft capital. I mean, it's not, round seven isn't good draft capital, but it's a little bit of a different scale than at, say, wide receiver or some of the other positions, certainly. So yeah, I mean, that there's so many names that we just mentioned. Estimate is more like a round four guy, but I love the names that you mentioned. They're all often available there in round three of rookie drafts. They're all available late in best ball. You start to talk about the upside handcuffs. You talk about a Bucky Irving and what Rashad White was able to do last year. And really mostly, at least, you know, my belief is gets all that volume because there's not a lot of other options. You know, we talked about that, I think, last week, Sean, on one of our draft streams. Vidal having the opportunity in front of him, Tyrone Tracy because of Singletary. You mentioned a weak starter in front of him. Man, a guy we decided to pass on in the late second round, Marshawn Lloyd. Really interesting, positive quote I saw on Twitter this morning as we're recording on Tuesday, that they don't just see him as a handcuff, basically. They want to get him involved. That I think someone asked about comparing it to when A.J. Dillon was at, you know, a rookie with Green Bay, and kind of, I think they said something about kind of bringing him along slowly. And the offensive coordinator sort of just straight up disagreed and was like, no, we're not really planning on bringing him along slowly. We think he's an explosive player and we want to get him to, I mean, Josh Jacobs is our guy, but we want to get Lloyd touches as well. And they've always used a couple backs. And so it wouldn't be that surprising to see Lloyd have a real role as well as handcuff ability. I mean, when you start to think about like best ball builds, Sean, this rookie group is really interesting in the double digit rounds as far as how you can build out your running back rooms.
I think they are. I think it's a very undervalued class and very undervalued specifically because they managed to all throw up red flags on their profiles as well, which if you're a zero RB drafter, that's absolutely perfect, right? Because we're, again, looking for these special elements to who the guy is, whether they're the peripherals, the athleticism, or just the overall production, which sometimes if you're not special in those other two ways, the overall production can end up being special. And if you have one of those special characteristics, then you've got a shot. And if you have a shot and you also have a great price, then again, for fantasy, that's perfect because you don't have to be right as much. Marshawn Lloyd is one where I've increasingly, after a spring of not understanding kind of how he was being evaluated because he just seems so electric and the peripherals are off the charts, but his teams wouldn't play him. It's become a little bit clearer to me that a lot of people actually have him as the best back in this class if he weren't such a huge fumbler. And so that'll be something that's interesting to track in, you know, the preseason as you're thinking through. Obviously, practices, the way NFL teams have to run them, are not going to necessarily be the best environment to tell these sort of things. But if he can go through the first five or six games of the 2024 season without fumbling, I mean, he's off to the races, right? Because when you watch Lloyd versus watching Josh Jacobs, one of them is going to jump out of the TV and the other one is going to be getting those, you know, 2 or 3 yards. And so there's a real opportunity there. And that was a difficult decision for us at the end of round two in our draft, because the other person who's sitting there at the end of round two is this really interesting tight end in Ben Sinnott.
Yeah, and we went that direction on a team where, I mean, it's a tight end premium format. We had already taken Brock Bowers in the draft and had already addressed tight end. I mean, we have Pat Freiermuth and Luke Musgrave, I think it is, as our two tight ends. Not strong or anything. But you could make the case that we didn't need to get to four tight ends at that point either. We talked about that pick for a while. Definitely a tricky one, and one that in part we went away from Lloyd because we also had just taken Jalen Wright one pick prior, and we knew we'd like running backs coming up, and we wound up getting all of Bucky Irving, Kamani Vidal, and Will Shipley at 303, 304, and 305. And so you're like, how many rookie running backs could we actually carry on this 20-man roster dynasty league? So we wound up deciding to take the tight end pick there, but some of that was us trying to navigate what our roster shape was going to look like and all of that. And then also tying that back to, well, I mean, do you just make the best player available pick? And then, because we've talked about that on the show as well, maybe you can go try to trade from the front end of your running back group. Maybe we take all these running backs and then go trade one of our actual starters and just have all of these rookie upside plays as our sort of whole running back room. There's a lot of different options that we had there, but the reason we took Sanat is we really like his profile as well. You've talked a lot about him. In your write-up, you compared him to this year's Sam Laporta, which I know you don't, you know, you say you always like to say that nobody's going to be this year's anything, but when Sean Siegel starts saying that somebody's going to be this year's Sam Laporta and you were all over Sam Laporta last year, I mean, I think it's probably why Sanat's ADP has risen about 50 picks in best ball. people are pretty excited to draft him right now.
And Ben, you say that, it's heartbreaking because in the first two streams I did with our buddy Peter Overzet, which you can get on the Best Ball Banana Stand, we selected Jaden Daniels, and then we had Sanat come to us in the perfect spot, right? We didn't have to reach for him. We didn't have to do any of that. He just fell right to us exactly where we needed him. And because we're chatting, we missed it both times. So that was a little bit disappointing. For anybody who would like, you know, I'd love it if you subscribe to that feed. It does help us out. And when I say us, I mean, it does help me and Ben out a little bit there too. Pete and I tried to draft the most explosive roster of all time this week. So anybody who wants to see like what a roster that's trying to one-up the Chiefs, one-up the Miami Dolphins looks like, that's what we did. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Ben, there's nothing like having it both ways where you say, no one's going to be this year's so-and-so, but this is the guy who is going to be. So you got yourself covered. But I really do like the combination, again, of production and athleticism there. The question is how he's going to fit in Washington. You already have these early vibes out of Washington. We're like, we're going to run the ball a lot to protect him. You're like, no, you're not. Jaden Daniels himself is going to run the ball a lot. That's not going to protect anybody. It's certainly not going to protect his body. Anytime that you let him take the snap from under center, he's going to be a threat to run it. You're also going to need to throw the ball some. And hopefully, the H-back is the guy. Ben, I pulled up a bunch of articles on him as we were trying to decide. Ben at one point sent me an email after I had just sort of inadvertently picked somebody. And he said, that's fine. We're going to exchange 37 more emails without deciding, which was definitely the way it was going. But Ben, they referred to him as an H-back multiple times there, and they were trying to make it sound positive. The thesis.
When has there ever been an H-back that dominated in fantasy? I think of Chris Cooley when I think of a Washington H-back, which he was pretty good, but that was 20 years ago.
The articles on him coming out of Washington say that the people who have watched him think that he looks almost exactly like George Kittle and almost exactly like Kyle Juszczyk. And I'm thinking to myself, those are two very different players.
Which one?
It's like one of them, I'm willing to take him at any price. The other one, like, he's not draftable at all.
He's not draftable. I mean, that's the fascinating thing too, because Kyle Juszczyk is a really good football player, but the ways that they use him, obviously he's not actually in the fantasy discussion.
And that'll do it for this episode of Stealing Bananas Shorts. Ben, we've got a really cool topic for the listeners coming up next. You grill me on my completely out of order rookie rankings, the huge problem I have with the 107 to the 110 tier. We try and find out why I'm down on one of the most fun and best wide receiver prospects to come out, I'm tempted to say in decades, but it's going to be an absolute blast show. We'll see if I survive Ben's interrogation on that one. Stay tuned for that. This has been Stealing Bananas, the short version, as I tried to say a few minutes ago when I started out. I'm Sean Siegel. With me is Ben Gretsch. Make sure you follow him at Yards Per Gretsch. Sign up for Stealing Signals. Sign up for Stealing Lines. He's going to have some video components for you later in the summer. They're going to be absolutely fantastic. You want to get in on the ground floor there. We got a lot of cool stuff coming out at RotoViz. The coupon code RVRadio2024 gives you a 10% discount on your one-year subscription. So much cool stuff going on. We'll bring you lots more content. We love you guys. Talk to you soon.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.